House Planning and Development Committee, April 17, 1969. Hearing on House Bill 1314. Work session on House Bill 1695 and Senate Bill 10.
House Bill 1314, Representative Elliott.
Yeah, I'm not ready.
Housekeeping, which we're trying to do. But
replace the words Joint Committee of Legislative Administration for Secretary of State, or later on the Legislative Fiscal Committee, so that we're eliminating the prior function of this particular agency is taken over by this. The whole concept is that many of the things that are being done for the legislature itself should be a decision of the legislature. And we're trying to eliminate administrative functions from Legislative Council, Legislative Fiscal Committee, which we regard as highly technical and competent people, and they shouldn't be involved with sticks and stones.
Thank you, Representative Elliott. Questions from the committee? Frank?
Section 3, page 3, line 16. What does this intend to mean, Bob?
We have a brief concept of union clerks, for example. Let's say that this committee was suddenly overloaded with a lot of clerical or needs clerical help. Well, then they could find you two or three extra clerks who might do it for just a week or two, this type of thing. Give us a little flexibility. Some of the committees, as they go along, don't have much of a workload.
We operated in this fashion, and we got the clerks in the Senate. We could get higher paid employees that way.
We should hope that this might eliminate that. In other words, because we've got the two together, and we're not operating as separate, like the Senate and the House. In other words, they're all part of the same committee.
Well, Mr. Chairman, seriously, what do you mean by assure proper timing? Coordinate operations of the Senate and House of Representatives in order to assure proper timing.
Well, I think it's just about what I said a moment ago. In other words, that the whole activity of the legislature is going along at a safe speed in terms of committee production of bills and so on. And one committee is overloaded caused by lack of clerical help and things of that sort. Well, then they're able to shift and speed up their process in timing. With the other committee, generally, what is involved there?
Is that all, Frank?
Is that clear?
No. Let's have Joe put a question, and we'll get back to
Bob, in relation to your last answer to Frank's question, would you read section 2, sub 3? And a comment on that, because as I read that, his term expires on the convening of the legislative session, and he's not in office during this time, so how is he going to coordinate any activities during the legislative session?
I don't know why that's in there. I want to make sure.
Well, there's a section here where the legislative service director is on.
Yeah, but then you said that this would be the duties of the members of this committee, and their term expired. So maybe I interpreted it wrong.
It seems to be in direct conflict with Section 2, actually, doesn't it?
This is at the end of his service.
I don't think there's any problems here because these people are all ex officio. They would begin their service at the time of the organization of the legislature in which they assumed their post.
So you'd reappoint new ones.
Now, he may not have had a new speaker, and he may not have been reelected either.
Further questions?
I have one more. You have a 10, as I roughly figured out, you have a 10-member committee. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 member committee. And they are to coordinate or work out this arrangement that's made up of the presiding officers and so forth that's designated. That means 5 members from each house. After having been around here for some time, it seems like sometimes that one house gets one direction, another house gets another direction. What is going to keep from an impasse? And who settles where an impasse develops?
The number 10 is an arbitrary figure in the representative right. We were trying to build into there the proper leadership and by using majority and minority to ensure we're fair to both parties. But I agree with you.
Then my next question is sub 6 of section 2.
Well, may I ask you a question first?
Yeah.
Your other joint committees, how is that set up with in regard to numbers? Like,
but we only have one joint committee.
All right, but your committees where they have an impasse, say the Senate has one idea and the House has another, and they appoint a committee for adjudication or to...
It has to be unanimous out of the conference committee, and then of course it has to be repassed in each house.
Well, I'm just kind of trying to bicker with you a little over the fact that this is even numbered. I think that we have other examples of even numbers.
Then, to further complicate the thing, you have a majority of each action of the conference committee, or this interim committee, whatever you want to call it, has to have a majority from each house approve affirmatively. So you have a joint committee voting separately.
The joint committee then makes recommendations for approval of both
houses. Which committee? No, I'm talking about section 6. No, section 2, sub 6.
Section 6.
Section 2. Action of the committee shall be taken only upon the affirmative vote of the majority members of each house. Now, the Ways and Means Committee, this violates more than that because you have an overall vote that you have each vote, each house voting separately.
Recall
that
first committee had new rules. Went through all the same subject, you went through all the rules. And generally, the rules that presented to both houses then were approved separately by the same approach to the
This means that the committee doesn't have final authority.
No, and probably properly so.
Sure.
Now, they do have final authority during the interim because nobody does that because it's not going to be in session. They do have final authority during the interim, as I understand.
Okay. During the interim, the problems that we're talking about are not the problems that they're really dealing with. Most of the problems they're dealing with is during the session, not during the interim.
Well, then I come back to this, then they expire. They're kind of expired during the session. At the end, and at the start of the session, every time it's fired.
Then a new one's appointed.
That's right. But then they carry on the work. There's no continuity then, Bob. They carry on the work of the committee before, the new committee, that they're reappointed.
We don't know they're going to be reelected. They may not be reelected.
You can't tell who's going to be here.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Kennedy.
I would think that it would take care of itself naturally, and that those persons that have served before that were back would probably be reappointed.
But there aren't any appointments, are there?
Well, wait a minute. I have to disagree a little bit because they have to be members, as I read it, of these committees. The speaker would be different. The president probably, well, might be different. The chairman of Ways and Means probably be different. The committee on rules chairman of the committee on rules would be doing. So you're not guaranteeing that they would be reappointed unless they'd be reappointed to those positions.
There isn't any way you can guarantee
But these are all ex officio. None of them are appointed to this committee.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't say that. Because of their position.
What section are you talking about, Joe?
Section 2.
I was talking about section 2, which is the makeup of this committee. Well, I was just bringing out.
Sounds fine. We'll get into that more as we have a work session. Yes. Thank you very much. Before we continue with the hearing on Senate Bill 1314, I would like to just move for a moment to do a little work on Senate Bill 10. I've asked Representative Cole to come with some information and Branchfield, so I will close the hearing on House Bill 1314 and open a work session on Senate Bill 10. And it's not my intention to hold additional public hearings on Senate Bill 10, but as there appears to be information that the committee should have, I will call individuals in. During our testimony on Senate Bill 10, there was some different or conflicting information on what had happened in Clatsop County as far as the development of their land use planning, their zoning and building regulations. So last week I asked Representative Cole to look into it for us, and he's here with that information.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
George, you put that mic up right closer for us, please.
So this way?
Yeah.
All right. I am a person with the development of our ordinance in Clatsop County. I'm here with the district attorney's office and when we finally written it in 1963, and I saw it through to the termination of the preliminaries and adoption of the final ordinance, do all the ordinances and all the resolutions and everything else that with it. So I have the version of it, and I want the opportunity to give you a brief history on what did transpire. First of all, Clatsop County originally appointed a planning board for that in 1937, but as far as I can determine, there didn't do much the way of planning for the county until 1963, about July 1963, when here through our Board of County Commissioners and County Court at that time, that Clatsop County was growing over all kinds of things that industry was coming in, bringing with it, of course, increasing population. Problems that come with the bridge has been approved and has been rebuilt, and we would be many work coming into that. So the county court appointed a Clatsop County Planning Commission under ORS 215, zoning chapter, and authorized that planning commission to proceed immediately with the formulation of plans for eventually developing a comprehensive plan for the county and the zoning ordinance. Within the boundaries affected by the ordinance was the county. no building or structure to be constructed or reconstructed or altered or enlarged. That's the determination of the Planning Commission and expected or reasonably expected to conflict with a proposed comprehensive plan of land use and development. And in all such cases, the approval of any such construction or land development use can be approved by the Planning Commission and permitted to change. Following that, provided for a way of appeal to the county commission, anyone felt aggrieved on the action plan. Following that, there were other ordinances adopted during this period, and one of them adopted the Uniform Building Code in regards to construction, all the other state codes, electrical, plumbing, sanitation. Adopted minimum lot sizes and setbacks for buildings. And set up a permit fee system. As part of that, after consultation with the rural groups, farm groups, an ordinance was passed exempting farm buildings or structures that were not intended for use in habitation from the permit fee requirement. And so you can see, we progressed along and tried to take care of problems that came up during the interim period that they were working on the comprehensive plan. They also passed an ordinance that no fees would be required for merely repair or maintenance of the use of the structure. They passed an ordinance requiring an annual fee for placement of mobile home triggers in the county during the period. The bridge construction was going on. There's an awful lot of transient labor coming in with mobile homes and triggers, and it became to be a problem with sanitation throughout the county. So they adopted this ordinance requiring a committee before it was in place. The purpose of this, of course, was to call this to the attention of the county sanitarium so he could be sure that wherever the trailer was being placed, that there were adequate facilities for water and sanitation and so forth. They also passed an ordinance at the same time giving us an upgrade in regards to subdivision requirements. Now, subdivision is provided for under separate statutes, but they passed an ordinance requiring that no land could be subdivided without matter first being presented to the Planning Commission and making a determination of the proposed development and that would reflect the ultimate proposed comprehensive plan that they intended to adopt. Then, for a period of 3 years, from November 1963 to November 1966, the Planning Commission met quite often with representatives of the city of Oregon cities who were contracted with to prepare our comprehensive plan for the county. They came down, they had been in the county for 3 months, surveying all the property, they use maps, as well as probably being used for at the time, study the highway system, population centers, and so forth, and we were a starting comprehensive plan of the county as to what it would appear the property the county could be zoned into and what the areas, for example, along the coast of recreation, some areas of industrial and development, or some for commercial and so forth, agriculture and forestry. Now, during this time, not only were they holding the representatives of the three Oregon cities, but also we were holding public hearings. They held over 40 of these public hearings during this 3 year period, to which were invited residents from various parts of the county to come in and discuss the proposed comprehensive plan for their area. That was the Lee Ward cities was a pair that they thought would be a reasonable comprehensive use of a particular area, such as the beach area or the large cape area on our southern coast, upriver, the Athenwana area. So pick an area such as that. They would develop what they thought would be a reasonable use and zone for that area. Then the versions would be sent out and notices in the paper of a public hearing for instant latter, he had come on and discussed with the plaintiff. This went on for 3 years. That's an over 40-plus hearings. And as a result of these meetings and these hearings, a final comprehensive plan was considered. And the proper hearings and adverse and so forth were required to adopt an ordinance based on such a plan were held. Being liable for this in all papers and other means of disseminating information and the ordinance was adopted in November 1966. Zoning the county to certain specific zoning areas where only certain types of construction or use of property could only be made and on, unless the amendments were made and adjustments or variances were granted. Coincident with that adoption, the vice of the county board of county commissioners at that time adopted an ordinance providing for adoption of the Uniform Building Code, the same way they have the other ordinance, and adopting the other codes of the state, and setting up a system of fees and permits so if anyone wanted to construct or use the property in some manner had to make an application to the planning commission. People in that office, and that was reviewed by the planning commission and by the sanitary, by the engineer, and presented to the planning commission if there was any variance in the permitted use. Now, the typical system, for example, if someone wanted to build a house, which is no house anywhere in the county, there's an application in the center. They would merely present their plans to the building inspector's office. They could be checked by hand, and would be checked by the county secretary, and would permit issue. The matter of having to go for approval of the plan I can truthfully say it. I feel somewhat personally on this because I personally guided the planning commission for over 3 years in all directions. And I think they followed to the letter law and went beyond that and did everything I possibly could to inform the public what was going on, what the consequences would be, and the plan for the county would be. And I have hard to advise you that any county would follow the same procedure adopting that ordinance would be in pretty strong position.
Fine, thank you very much, George. Questions from the committee, George?
Yes, George, there's a little conflict between the city and county in statute, as I remember, in that the city, the governing body, must approve any comprehensive plan, but in the county, only the planning commission has to approve it and can institute it without the vote of the county commissioners. Are you familiar with that?
No, I don't believe that's correct.
Would you check that? I couldn't find the book up here because you had it. I think it is correct, Howard, because I talked to the county this weekend of Plain County, and they told me this was so because we have a little opposite situation there. We have a situation where the county commissioners desire a stronger general plan, but the planning commission doesn't want that strong general plan. Now,
maybe we could get back to that question.
Well, let me ask one more then.
Okay, fine. Sure. Another question.
The governing body of your county then did approve the general plan.
Yes. Every action the planning commission took was ratified or turned down by the governing body, even comprehensive plan.
Well, if this isn't true, I would offer this as an amendment later on. Maybe we can work that out, George.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Sure,
I know this is true in our county. The county commissioners have to, are the final authority.
County, even over the city plan?
Well, now over the county plan.
Well,
now they can go ahead, though.
County commission can overrule anything.
After they've already done it?
Yes. Because
then they can repeal a general plan in the county that's been instituted by the planning commission.
Well, general planning, I was talking about action the planning commission based on the plan.
No, I meant general plan.
Okay. Good. See that, George?
Thank you.
Paul, was the hang-up in Clatsop County on zoning and land use or more on the building codes, actually?
I feel the original was on the building codes.
What was the final action of the referendum? Was the vote removed? Was the whole thing thrown out or what?
No, it failed, but I heard the vote, less than 1,000 votes. So it was really close, and it boiled down to really a... The first thing that we had a court fight over the Western City to vote in the election, and the court determined that they couldn't vote. City ordinance and the statute only applies to the town meddling over the city, so it was quite a question as to whether the city should be allowed to vote. And the court held that they have, there wasn't interest there, the residents of the city should be allowed to vote in the election.
Was it defeated in the rural zone, rural areas? Other questions, Bob?
No, that's all. Okay.
Are you familiar with Senator Camp? I wonder if you could perhaps read the bill again and advise the committee where you think the bill as it is presently written provides for the governor to establish building codes or to regulate the area of building codes.
Well, we're going to have another work session next Tuesday, George, so if you have a chance to do that between now and Tuesday, well, I appreciate hearing back from you. Other questions from the committee?
Yes, Bill?
You
said it failed. Did you mean the repeal failed?
Yes.
That it's presently in effect?
It's on that. It's on the next year. It's think a lot will depend upon how much you pass. So the mission is something. I look forward to it being at least protected and thrown out of here.
Other questions?
The interesting thing is that they want to throw it out of rural areas, which is everywhere in the county, just city. So right back where you start. And we did repeal on the first recession statutes that came to zoning districts. And it might do really well.
Back, we might have him, if he's thinking about that, having just thought to that and write us some amendments to that effect, too, that we might look at and we might think we might want to, if we might want to use.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind, we'd like to consider those in our next session. Did you say Clatsop County is considering seriously that method? Or they
no.
can't institute that?
No, no, no. No. No.
Did I infer from your remarks that if Senate Bill 10 passes, that the initiative would not be tempted?
I
did
not support. I think they'd much rather work with and see what they've got than have a new proposal. People recognize
it. Other questions? I know George has another meeting to go to. We appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you.
I hear from Mr. Branchfield and from Mike.
Frank, do you have any statute?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any prepared testimony. I'm here in response to your request, and I'm assuming that your request is based upon a question Irv Mann asked me a few days ago, is whether Section 4 of the bill authorizes the government to have a building code. Am I assuming correctly?
That is one of several questions that have come to the attention of this committee, right?
Well, I, in my opinion, it does not. I think that if Section 4 alone were in the bill, that would still be my opinion, because you can't just assume a building code from the fact that notice would be given as to what type of building is intended to be erected. Page 2 of the bill, lines 22 and 23, says flatly, the governor may not prescribe building regulations. And I don't see how that can be stated any more clearly.
Thank you.
Now, I have some questions about the bill.
That's what the purpose of this session is. Please
okay.
Go ahead and raise them.
Incidentally, let me say that I personally subscribe to what is being thought to be done here. I think we should, I think this will encourage the counties to do their job of zoning and land use planning, and I think it should be done. I think it's essential. As when I say I have questions, I don't mean that I'm questioning the intent of the bill at all. I understand that there have been some additional amendments prepared, which this committee has accepted, and I hope I'm not repeating any of those. I don't have, and I hope I'm not repeating them. But on page 4, line 13, there's a technical error. It's an amendment, okay.
Right.
And I'm jumping around, page 2, in section 1, line 7, substitute a comprehensive land use plan and zoning ordinances. I'm assuming that should be singular.
Incidentally, the amendments we adopted on April 1st changed the word wherever ordinances appear to regulation.
You probably took care of that.
Yes.
I did have a couple of questions that I think are a little basic. Whenever I see the word enjoin, I think of a court. And in Section 1, or Section 2, Sub 3, says the governor may, however, enjoin the construction of buildings. And I confess, perhaps lack of preparation on my part, but I confess I don't know whether that means that the governor can issue an order saying you can't build, or whether the governor is going to be required to go into court.
On line 23, the words have been inserted, caused to be instituted an appropriate proceeding to.
Well, that would clarify my mind on that one. Too bad I didn't have a chance to look at these amendments before, but I wasn't aware of them. And maybe you've already amended to take care of the questions I have with regard to Section 4. I don't think this gives the governor any right to enact a building code, because it would really be going far beyond the language. And also, when I mentioned governor here, it's my understanding that the committee has been informed that it is the hope of our office that rather than the governor, that it will be the Department of Environmental Quality that's designated, assuming that that bill passes. But whether it's the governor or a department, I'm wondering if anything should be inserted here to say where that notice should be given. Normally, if you're going to give notice to the governor, for instance, you send it to him here at his office in Salem. I don't know whether this would impose a hardship on people 100 or 200, 300 miles away. I don't know. I just raised the question for the committee consideration. This does not say what type of notice. It says what has to be in there, but doesn't say it has to be fabrication, mail, or what have you, which I think is fine. I think the less red tape you get here, the better. But I wonder whether there is any necessity. Suppose that thing were in my desk right now, if it were in the governor's office. Any of you who've seen my desk lately would know that it could be lost and not seen for 6 months. I'm just wondering if we should put something in here so that the fellow will be able to prove he sent the notice in case it's later questioned. I just raised it at that point. I don't know the answer. Now, suppose I own a piece of land in what has been designated as a residential area. And I start putting up a building 200-300 feet long and a couple hundred feet wide. And I say my brief description, they intend to use the building, but use it for my residence. The governor might doubt that I'm telling the truth when I say that, putting up a building like that. You might suspect that I'm really going to use it for a factory. But I wonder if the governor can really do anything about it, or the Department of Environmental Quality, or what have you. In other words, you give the notice, and I'm just wondering if that isn't the end of it. And then if you change your mind, if I put up this building like this, and then I start manufacturing something, and whoever is responsible for enforcing comes out and says, you said you intend to use that as a home. Okay, I changed my mind. Can you do anything about that under this bill? I have my doubts. And I think maybe that there should be something in here to say that there shall not be a change of use without the consent of the proper authority. I have expressed my question about the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Fine, thank you. Do you have questions from the committee? Ross, Rich?
I'm a little bit concerned, Ed, about Section 7, which says that the county or city governing body or other zoning authority adopts a comprehensive land use plan and zoning ordinances in accordance with the standards provided in Section 3 of this Act and ORS 215. So on. 215 is a chapter relates to the zoning, the county zoning. wondering if it wouldn't be better to delete what the standards provided in Section 3 of this Act to avoid a conflict. The county has acted, it strikes me they probably should be required to act under two separate laws.
If there is a difference, then I think either one should be stricken or they should be reconciled. And I'm not familiar enough with the law to know which is the difference.
It would strike me that you could have some nice court battles as to what really, what the county has acted on, whether it's acted under the 215 or under the provisions of Section 3 of this Act.
I think that question could arise.
Do we? Bob? Ed, should there be an appeal someplace from the governor's decision?
I'm jumbling now. I think that... I think that there might, that it would be good to provide for an appeal, yes. It seems to me that this is a rather cursory thing, as outlined here. A notice is sent in, and then the governor puts it, if the governor goes into court to enjoin something, then the person is getting his day in court. And I'm not sure that there's too much the governor can do other than going to court. Now, he can sue for damages, I suppose, on behalf of the city or the county or the neighborhood. the only hearings the governor is holding are those on the zoning itself, not on the actual use of it. And I actually don't remember. There is presently an appeal from the order of the county court on zoning if they go into court to... I would think that there should be the same provisions. The state agency isn't necessarily any more apt to be 100% right than is the county commission.
In regard to your question about the notice, would this be the appropriate solution? Say it's a notice to the governor or an agency designated by the governor.
No, I don't think so. Because I live out in Lake County, we'll say, and I've got some land that the Lake County Court has zoned, and the governor has come along and zoned it, and I may not know what that agency is. I don't know how to find out who that agency is. I want to get started on my building. I want to put the cattle shed, and I want to start right now. I don't know who this agency is, but we're going to find out.
You could designate the county commissioners of Lake County.
Well, I have made my point clear. I think... Let's assume that I have enough intelligence to go to the law. And the law says the governor or an agency designated. But I don't know for looking at the law who that is. Unless I find the regulation someplace. And I expect you would all be surprised as to how few the law offices have the copies of the regulations that are filed with the Secretary of State. So where do they find those regulations? They're difficult to find.
Second question, in your estimation, how many counties are going to ever allow the governor or come to the point where the governor is going to have to step in?
I have no way of knowing that, except that if I were a county commissioner, I'd crack my tail to make certain that I didn't let those guys from Salem tell me how to run the county.
Don't you think that this is going to be the...
I think that's apt to happen, yes, but I have no way of knowing how many counties, except just personally simply dealing with people.
Is that all, Joe?
Yeah.
Other questions from the committee?
Mr. Chairman, did I say that Rich raised another question in my mind. Another question about it. It says that the plan and ordinances promulgated by the governor shall be ineffective during the time of the plan adopted by the county. Again, I'm going to display my ignorance. Is there any need to keep them quiescent? Would it not be better, and I may be catching hell behind my back from the rest of the governor's staff, I don't know. Wouldn't it be better to say that once the county adopts an ordinance, that the state ordinance no longer has any effect? Because if the county should repeal an ordinance and the state then felt that it had to move in again, it might want to make something different. I don't know. I'm going to just ask a question.
Back to 13-14, I'd like to give Stan Church about 2 minutes to present some additional amendments for consideration.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Stan Church, representing the Arts Association of Realtors. We already have submitted to the committee amendments that we thought were applicable to this act, but principally to set the expected date of 2 years, 1973. Give the county a chance to into effect. Number two is they were making satisfactory progress by the effective date. The governor would have the option to extend the date that the reasonable completion of the plan. Number three, that there would be an alternate in the county once the opponent is over. We affirm the element of the Art Association and its regarding principle that's there. One of the things we need to say about asking these smaller counties of the state to acquire the necessary personnel in the form of miners to get this job done. It was our feeling that in many of these cases there would be a very, very difficult budgetary problem. Article was 1 year ago. But the Planning Commission of Oklahoma County is now asking for an additional $40,000 for staff. And this includes the assistant planning director and a single salary of $11,915. Also points out that the anticipated revenue of the commission is $132,000 and the cost would be $365,280 if these budget requests are granted. Now, I'm in Oklahoma County to report this, but if a small county in our community wants to keep assume a small woman is offered $12,000, a smaller company is probably going to have offered $15,000. I have questioned the city treasurer or the city manager of my community on the availability of staff personnel. And he said, normally speaking, a small city or a small company, they go out just one or two ways. And first of all, contact them.
Close now the work session for today on Senate Bill 10 and return and open the hearing on House Bill 1314. Bob Elliott has already said, all right.
when we first came in, but I thought we would move around to that.
Okay. Give us any information on 1314? We have this letter from Wynn Hunt about the fiscal aspect of the city.
If the committee will remember, the first time it came up, we asked about the fiscal implications of this bill. And Wynn Hunt said $60,000, which I'm sure was quite a shock to the committee. So I asked him to dig out and find out how much of this would be new money and how much of it would be money that's already being spent. And did he give you a copy of that, Tom? Well, speaking from memory, he said about $29,000 of this money is being spent now from legislative council and legislative fiscal and the state secretary of state's office and so forth, so that approximately $31,000 would be new money. It's very difficult to gather these figures because you have to break them out of budgets that are already in operation, and it's almost it's very difficult to really make an accurate guess on what's being spent now by these other groups for the legislature. I have a copy of that, but I didn't bring it with me.
Right, now we have before us some amendments that were presented by the state archivist there some time ago. You want to take a look at those? They're Mark 13:14. Would you like to go through these amendments with us very quickly and explain once again the purpose of them? Please give your name and title for the
show. My name is Dunaway, the state archivist. These amendments specifically would accomplish the following. First place, records of all the committees and the assembly would be delivered directly to the archivist rather than through the intermediary legislative services officer, which is the function of the legislative fiscal officer. The archivist would expect to furnish necessary instructions, clerical help and support, including boxes. And all records would be received to the new committee. Now, actually, in practice, the state fiscal officer has not been able to handle the work, and we have been doing this job for him. The transfer to the archive records of the sessions of the legislature gathered by the staff of the House, as well as the non-current record committees, which have a continuing existence like those of the emergency board. And at present, there isn't really provision for the transfer of records from the legislative committee and other such committees, although I have some. They have come periodically and I come regularly, if not established precedent. Now, the third thing that it would do would be to provide responsibility or take responsibility for the arrangement and classification of the records on the archivist and transferring it from the legislative service officer. And that the archivist, of course, is made responsible for necessary indexing and translation of the guide. The bill will clarify one thing which you probably are not aware of, the practice of the archivist to microfilm the minutes to find their ready for the use. And we would like to consider the original negatives as security copies of those minutes so that if anything happened to the original pages, original files, we would still have a legal copy. The copies of the minutes are borrowed back by the next committee in the next session. They have been borrowed occasionally by the legislative fiscal officer or some particular representative, and there are several sets that have never come back to us. And I think it's important that this should be clarified.
Rogers. They bring back whatever amendments are necessary to this bill, and we can act on it after they have cleaned it up or whatever happens to be necessary.
Getting awful tired of working with that man. That labor management be.
Friendship. I wouldn't object, but wouldn't it be better? I mean, let me ask this, Tom. How many other bills do you have in for the full committee consideration? Are you pretty
good? We're scheduled for Tuesday and Thursday next week. I believe for the full 2 hours, based on the number of new bills and the work sessions we've already scheduled. I think we really ought to have some serious work done on this, and
I do too.
To consider Tuesday for final action is what we need to do.
If Frank has time, I would like to have him.
What about Gordon? He was on the advisory committee.
Yes, he was.
I wonder if you could get together with Gordon, Bob, and tell him questions that have been raised by the committee relative to it, and what the figures that wins figures you get. Why I would like to take it on for final action next Tuesday. Then. That'd be all right.
Next Tuesday, Lordy, this is Thursday.
Right.
Work over the weekend.
If you can do it, if it's absolutely not possible, well, of course we'll have to wait till Thursday, but I do think we ought to get a bill of this sort on its way, if it's going to go at all.
It does have to go to Ways and Means, this, Chris.
Does it have fire records? Well, I'm not sure. I don't think so.
Well, there's $31,000 at least. We have some money, huh?
Sure. Well, maybe we can send it to Ways and Means Tuesday, then. Well, let's be prepared to try to take final action on it.
I think you've run into trouble on the floor that it wasn't, didn't go to Ways and Means. There's fiscal implications.
All right. Well, let's consider amendments and try to get it cleaned up and sent to Ways and Means too. We will check to see if it did have a prior reference, but I agree with you. Whether or not it did, it probably should go there. Are there any other questions on 13 and 14?
Well, can we have Frank come up?
Yeah. Frank is really covered up with mass transit.
If he has time, I don't know if you have time or not.
Would you help him if you do that?
I can't give any
value. Okay. Close the hearing on 13-14. Open our work session on 1695.
Chairman.
Mr. Kennedy.
I would like to propose on that.
All right.
On page 2.
1695.
Section 1, following line 19. I would propose to insert the following new language.
Just after the word government on line 19.
And after the word energy on line 19, page 2.
Page 3. Okay.
Okay. Would be a new section 3, which says what state what says follows or something. I just practiced talking. Developing state policy concerning the location of nuclear production facilities, comma, the Nuclear Energy Council shall take cognizance of A, the opinions and views of local area populations relative to both environmental and economic effect of such facilities, semicolon B, the effects of waste heat and operational radioactive discharge upon the environment and ecology near the site, semicolon C, land use characteristics of the site, including but not limited to the aesthetics of the site and environmental and economic effect of the site on adjacent lands, period. And a new section 4. The Nuclear Energy Council shall recommend to agencies of Nuclear Energy Council shall recommend to agencies of competent jurisdiction conceptual guidelines for land use planning associated with nuclear production facilities. And on line 20, delete 3 and insert 5.
I have a discussion on amendments. Did you move?
Yeah. In a new section, man. New subsection.
I'm sorry, new subsection.
Yeah.
Discussion on the amendment.
Yes, the first point you said was opinions of the people. What?
The opinions and views of local area population relative to both environmental and economic effects of such facilities.
I'm trying to keep a straight face too there. Adhere to. Now then, supposing this is done and a person still wants to make a further appeal. Does he have any, or a group of people have any further appeal under this, or is that a decision final?
Well, let me answer part of your question. Private power companies do not have condemnation power, right? According to one of the representatives of a private power company. So far as a nuclear power site, thermal plant. I should know by Friday whether
a public power?
Yeah. UF, for example.
I asked him about his condemnation power.
Yeah, but I don't think he necessarily knows what he's talking about.
The answer he gave me, he could condemn something in Sherman County if he wants to.
That's what he said, but I'm not so sure he can, and I should have that answer by Friday as to whether or not he can.
Now, when you have a combination...
Because you've got to... That's the point. It's not just EWEB, it's still in that plant, really.
Which attorney general are you going to ask?
I'm going to other sources. I don't know about EWEB, but in terms of, they certainly couldn't violate a zone without a zone change. A private company couldn't violate a zone without getting a zone change. They can't condemn. So I think probably in their case, it's probably pretty rather sufficient regulation already in effect. Now, as far as EWEB is concerned, I don't know yet, but I should find out by...
It looks like where there was private and public together, it looks to me like it had to adhere to the restrictions that would be on the private company.
Can you add anything to that?
No, I can't. Kennedy, all I know is that one of my attorneys told me that we do not have our combination as far as the location of their own. Now, whether or not he went, I haven't researched that.
Further questions, Joe?
No.
Okay.
If they don't, I think they may want to suggest some legislation, but I don't think it belongs to 1695. That's not the bill, but maybe Mr. Dietering's bill might provide us with a quote vehicle, unquote.
Jack, would you take the chair, please? In your opinion, is this bill should to go to Ways and Means now?
I think so. With one other thing I would like you to consider.
Fine, go ahead.
On page 4, the language currently reads, the council shall meet at least once each month. I'm not sure that that's necessary. What is the committee's intent that it be held down to once per month? With request to consider some language similar to 4, at least 4 times a year, something less than once a month as a requirement.
Right. What would you suggest the language be?
It can't be changed by, on page 4, section 5, subsection 2, line 3, delete once each month and insert 4 times each year.
Fine, you've heard the
proposal. Why not just say the council should meet at least quarterly?
We'll meet every 3 months.
Well, then you'd have to meet every 3 months.
You might want to not meet at all for 1 3 months and meet
twice.
Okay. Mr. Kennedy moves that the amendment be adopted as stated. Is there further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendments are adopted. Anything else, Jack, in this?
That's right.
I'm so
Mr. Snedeker, do you have any comment?
I'm so
Mr. Snedeker, do you have any comment on 1695 you'd like to make?
No, sir. I would like to see I haven't seen the amendments Representative Kennedy
is. Yeah, well, the secretary has them, and
nobody else has.
Yeah. What are you complaining about?
It's still an advisory agency, is it not? It's just going to take in additional considerations. I doubt if we would have strenuous objections.
Okay.
I don't have an authority.
don't guarantee what we might say in the Senate, though.
Kennedy moves the House Bill 1695 as amended be sent to Ways and Means. In discussion, those in favor will answer aye as the roll is called. Those opposed, no. Clerk will call the roll.
Bradley.
Aye.
Engel.
Aye.
Robert?
Aye.
Rogers?
Aye.
Willis?
Aye.
Wingard?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Aye.
Would you turn to the first bill in your book, House Bill 1063? I believe that bill is no longer appropriate, so I would accept an amendment. Mr. Rogers moves to the table, House Bill 1063. Is there discussion?
Yeah, I have to get to that.
3/4 on that.
3/4. Those in favor of tabling House Bill 1063 will answer aye as the name is called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Bradley.
Aye.
Engel.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Rogers.
Aye.
Willis.
Aye.
Engel.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Aye.
Any further business comes before the table? Now that we've done it, what did we do and what was before that we didn't do it? Before that we didn't do it.